This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A University of Cincinnati student was sentenced to 20 years in prison after he and an accomplice robbed a local bank, making off with $130,000. At trial, the student claimed he did it in order to pay for his college tuition. He was released in March after nearly a dozen years behind bars. That former student will join us in the back half of today's show as we explore a new initiative that looks to combat overpunishment of defendants convicted of serious crimes. But first, let's talk about fake news. How are you able to keep track of what's truthful and what's misleading when scrolling your social media feeds? There's a new tool that claims to help you figure it all out. It's called NewsGuard. But some, maybe in conservative outlets or hard liberal outlets, are critical of it. Joining Cincinnati Edition today, our NewsGuard editorial director, Eric Efron. Welcome, Eric.
Hey, thank you. Great to be here.
And University of Cincinnati McMicken College of Arts and Sciences, head of the journalism department and associate professor, Dr. Jeffrey Blevins. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Michael.
The number to call to join the conversation is 513-419-7100. We want to hear from you and your opinion about fake news or how you avoid fake news in your social media feed. You can also email talk at wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those in the show. So, Eric, let's start with you. Just tell us in general what NewsGuard is.
Sure. So NewsGuard is a service that rates and reviews news and information sites, all shapes and sizes. We've done about 2,200 or more U.S. sites, and we're starting to do sites in Europe as well. And what we do is we look at the websites and we assess them based on some very basic journalism criteria. Does the site run corrections? Does the site tell you who owns the site? Does the site tell you anything about who runs the site and who makes the content? Unlike a lot of fact-checking organizations, which assess particular articles or particular claims, what we aspire to do is get a handle on the site writ large. So we, at the end, can give readers some insight as to the level of credibility and transparency they should expect if they follow a link on a Google search or on their Facebook feed and look at an article from a site that they may not be familiar with.
So how did NewsGuard get started? What's the origin of this enterprise?
Well, both our founders are veteran journalists, and I think, like a lot of journalists, have been concerned about a lot of the confusion that's out there about what's real and what's fake, what's credible and what isn't. And we saw this as a tool, and not the only tool, to kind of help members of the public navigate the sort of the wild, wild west of the information economy that we all live in. So the idea is really to empower consumers. We don't, like some of the tech platforms, we're not trying to banish any particular points of view. We're basically just trying to tell people that you should know that if you're going to go to this website, here are how the website adheres or doesn't adhere to some various basic journalistic standards. And we apply the same standards, whether it's a legacy newspaper that's been around for 250 years or whether it's a startup that's been around for 8 months. We still aspire to hold all the sites to the same standards, regardless of their pedigree, regardless of their politics or ideology.
And so functionally, this is some type of plugin for the web browser that one uses.
So we are licensing our content to tech platforms. So in the cases, for example, Microsoft licenses our content. And if you use Microsoft's mobile Edge browser, when you get to a website, you'll actually see up in the address bar NewsGuard's symbol. And if you click on that, you'll get as much information as you would ever want to have about that particular website. In addition to that, we have a free plugin that's available on our website, www.newsguardtech.com. And once you have that plugin, when you are on the internet using search, or whether you get a link to an article on your Facebook feed, you will also have access to our content that way.
I'm curious about how some of these media outlets that NewsGuard has assessed have responded to these assessments?
Yeah. So, you know, as you can imagine, you know, nobody likes to be criticized. And we are putting ourselves out there as enforcing or at least articulating some standards. So not surprisingly, you know, sites who end up getting a low rating from us often are not happy. And I'm happy to tell you about some of them. But I should also say that we've had hundreds of websites that, as a result of our inquiries or as a result of our actual write-ups, have changed some of their practices in order to get a better rating from us. So we've been very happy with that response because it really indicates that, you know, for a lot of people, the idea of articulating and socializing, if you will, certain kinds of journalistic standards are actually in everybody's best interest. But there have been websites, RT, a Russian propaganda site, some far right and far left sites that we've ended up giving a red rating to. And by the way, we give ratings of either red or green. Red meaning you might want to think twice before you go to this site, or think three times. And so for sites that have gotten red ratings, you know, they have pushed back, questioned our right to do this, our ability to do this. But we do try to be very transparent. So if we get a complaint from a website, we're happy to publish that. We put their comments in our write-ups, which we call nutrition labels. So we try to at least not be hypocritical and ask for and try to give the same transparency that we're looking at other websites to provide.
513-419 is the number. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join this conversation. And Jeffrey, I'm going to bring you in just a moment. But first, sure. Eric, I read in your bio that you used to work for Reuters.
Right. I was at Reuters for 7 years. And before that, I worked at The Week magazine, which is a publication that does reviews of news and opinion from across the world and across the web. So my background is in, I guess, what you would describe as mainstream journalism.
And then with Reuters being one of the world's more respected news organizations, I'm curious how you, as a news consumer, independent of your association with NewsGuard, how did you discern between what makes a reputable news source and what doesn't?
Well, one thing, that's a very good question. One thing that I think is a good place to start is that if you see something that seems very surprising and that you haven't seen anywhere else, it's usually a good idea to check and see whether other sources that you believe in have picked up on that story. So the first thing I would do is never depend on one source and always try to, you know, make a judgment based on, you know, some research. And then just like any consumer, you know, when you get to know a publication, you get to know their standards and you get to know how consistent they are. You get to know whether they correct errors. And so to me, the idea of issuing corrections of all of our 9 criteria may be the most important because we all make mistakes. It's actually impossible to imagine a website not making a mistake. So a website that has been around for 10 years and has never issued a correction, my guard would go up.
And Jeffrey, you lead the journalism department at the University of Cincinnati. I'm wondering what impact this current debate over what news is real and what isn't, particularly as it relates to legacy media and partisan politics, what type of effect is that having on the studies that are undertaken by these future journalists in your program?
Well, you know, as far as future journalists go, people who are coming in, you know, students who are coming in as journalism majors, I think it's made their job a little bit harder in the sense of, you know, defending what they study. But for me, the real concern is for students who are not journalism majors. It's students who are going to be consumers of news. And you know, there is a lot of confusion about what is and what is not, you know, news or what is fake news. I taught a course with political science and communication at UC for incoming freshmen last year. And it was, you know, heart-wrenching, you know, that, you know, many students couldn't tell the difference between, you know, amongst legacy outlets, newspapers, and for instance, cable opinion programs. To them, they were all the same. And that's really disheartening.
We heard Eric reference whether, when you're discerning whether a news site is reputable or not, maybe you should consider whether this story you're reading has been published anywhere else. And I think that may relate to, maybe a tale about sex trafficking at a pizza shop in Washington, D.C. Right. But when there's an exclusive report that has detailed sourcing about an American government official or someone connected to someone in power meeting with a foreign adversary on foreign soil, and it's only in one source, but that source is the Washington Post or the New York Times. Are you noticing that people are still more willing to discount that because of the belief that there's a partisan bent in that reporting?
Absolutely. And, in a lot of people's minds, those are all equal platform. That's just as credible. It doesn't matter if it's the Washington Post or the New York Times. More likely, depending on one's age, is it a friend who retweeted this, or is it even a meme that tends to have as much credibility as where it came from, what we would consider, a credible legacy news outlet. And I think that's the real problem is on, the news consumer side.
And Eric, I assume there is no news guard for the memes that we're all encountering across our social media platforms.
Well, I should say that one thing that we tried to do at NewsGuard is if there is a meme that is suddenly trending and there are, articles picked up either by left-wing or right-wing media pushing a particular point, we will jump on that website and try to get to the bottom of whether or not this is accurate or not, and try to get a nutrition label out, within that day. So at least as those stories are circulating, if people encounter those websites, our information will be available. There is a media literacy aspect to what we do, because in the explanation of why we are criticizing a site for a particular behavior or not, we are talking about things like are they clear about their sourcing? Do they use a lot of anonymous quotes and without any indication of the credibility of the person being quoted? Do they try to get both sides of the story if they are professing to be an even-handed news site? So we do think that that there is a problem out there in terms of media literacy. And I should also note that NewsGuard has been very heartily embraced by librarians around the country because they see it also as a tool to help them with helping their patrons. And the Toledo Library and others in Ohio have been some of the first ones to sign up. So we've been very excited about that because it really is consistent with our mission.
I'm really glad to hear you talk about that, Eric, because that's, honestly, one of my concerns that we don't do a good enough job educating, individuals to be good news consumers. And it's also kind of one of the concerns that I have about, these news rating services. But first, I want to get to something that I think Eric and I will both agree on, is that this type of self-regulation and optional, app is a much better way to go than government regulation of fake news. And I mention that because Singapore just passed a law a couple weeks ago that allows ministers of the government to order corrections and takedowns of, what it considers, misstatements of fact, and can also include criminal penalties or fines. So I'm very happy that that is not where we are.
I think we all come from a kind of a culture, a free press culture, where it's very easy to kind of see how that sort of regulation could very easily slide into censorship. And Singapore is just the latest example where we've had political leaders who, using fake news as their rallying cry, are cracking down on media that that happen to be critical of them. So we are much more comfortable with the idea of giving more information to people to deal with this, not less.
I want to talk about Fox News. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's running for the Democratic presidential nomination, says she won't go on there for a town hall. And I know that when NewsGuard launched, there were a lot of tweets asking how Fox News would be rated. So we're going to get into that after this short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. President Donald Trump frequently takes aim at so-called fake news, even when the reporting in question appears to be quite real. But fake news can also be real. Nefarious websites created to mislead the public about current events and to widen the divide in American political discourse are now ubiquitous on social media channels. But a new tool claims to help. Let's talk more about NewsGuard now with NewsGuard editorial director Eric Efron and University of Cincinnati McMicken College of Arts and Sciences head of the journalism department and associate professor Dr. Jeffrey Blevins. 513-419-7100 is the number to call. Talk at WVXU.org is our email, or find us on Facebook or Twitter to join this conversation. Eric, I'm curious about the Democratic presidential candidate, Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, who said she won't go on Fox News for a town hall because of the opinion host's biases. Is there some level of personal opinion infecting what is perceived to be real and fake news?
Well, so Fox News is a tricky one. We did rate the website, and I should point out that we rate websites, not networks. So in rating CNN, MSNBC, Fox, et cetera, we are rating what they put on their website. And clearly, it's a mix of news and opinion. In some ways, that's actually clearer on the website than it is if you're just a casual viewer. Fox News has some very straight-laced and well-regarded journalists, and they have some folks who speak as if they are working on behalf of the Trump administration. So a consumer needs to understand what they're getting into when they either go on the website and view Fox. You can't argue with Elizabeth Warren, who says that there are strong opinions expressed on Fox News. That's a different question about whether or not it is wise for Democrats to go on. But I think Fox News, does both things, as many publications do, and consumers need to understand who they're watching and what the agenda is of the program.
And we should point out that NewsGuard gave Fox News a green light. It's green rating.
Right. So with Fox News, they didn't get the highest score. We did find that they don't have a robust corrections policy. They're not clear about who runs the website. They're not clear about their ownership. There are issues with the site. But overall, if you look at it in a binary way, red versus green, FoxNews.com was given a green by NewsGuard.
I'll point out that the website Hannity.com, which is operated by Sean Hannity, a well-known Fox News personality, but that site is, I guess, independent of the news organization, you flagged that one red.
Yeah. And again, we're not anti-opinion. I should be clear about that. There's some, true and deep value to opinion journalism. We just look for transparency. So we want people to say, this is an opinion, or this is my agenda. I'm an anti-Trump website, and what you read here is going to advance an anti-Trump agenda. We want to know that. I just want to be clear. It's, we don't have, some old fashioned idea that news is just, who, what, where, when, why. We think there's real value to all the conversation and debate that's out there. But again, we look for transparency.
Jeffrey, I'm curious, in the academic world, what impact you may believe President Trump is having on journalism?
Well, he's really has hurt the credibility of the institution of journalism. simply by calling, you know, news that he disagrees with fake news. And I think that, you know, puts it on equal platform in a lot of people's minds that, you know, well, you know, what I might, you know, hear on an opinion program on Fox or a meme that I might, you know, see that's tweeted out by a friend of mine and the Washington Post, well, those are all equally credible sources. And of course, they're, you know, they're not. But President Trump has gone, you know, far beyond that. You know, he's demonized the press, called them the enemy of the people, said that they are dishonest, that they're scum, that they're horrible people. That has really, I think, eroded the institutional credibility of journalists and journalism. And I think it's, you know, it's made it hard for a lot of people to, you know, distinguish between, you know, what is a credible outlet, what is an incredible, you know, outlet, that everything seems to be relative and up for grabs. It's all opinion. And, you know, in some case, I think we've been there for a while. There in political science, there's this concept known as, you know, confirmation bias, that people, you know, essentially seek out, you know, news and information that, you know, confirms, you know, their pre-existing beliefs. They don't, you know, want to be challenged. And I think that has perhaps fed into that is some, and I in some ways. And I think that what we really need to, you know, to focus on is, you know, educating news consumers, but how to do the intellectual, you know, work themselves. You know, my concern is that we are looking to the market and technology to solve some of the problems that, you know, the market has, you know, has created in some extent. And it doesn't mean that, you know, all, you know, opinion reporting is, you know, is wrong. I'm an opinion writer, you know, myself, but there's a big difference between, you know, opinion based on fact versus something that is just, you know, patently false.
I want to read a part of something that you wrote, Jeffrey, sure. Published on Monday at journalism-history.org. The piece was titled Free Expression and Fake News. Quote, in the realm of social media, it seems that the nature of fake news has vexed the very notion of truth itself and the validity of certain forms of knowledge over others. While institutions of journalism employ empiricism in the reporting of information and the presentation of facts, fake news comes in a barrage of memes and tweets and provides a form of discourse in which no perspective is any more or less credible than any other. In post-truth, everything is relative. There is no right or wrong, fact or falsity, truth or lie, in which case we might reasonably ask if the marketplace of ideas metaphor has outlived its usefulness. So I guess if we ask ourselves that, Jeffrey, about the marketplace of ideas and whether it has outlived its usefulness, what answer do we conclude?
Well, this is where, you know, I think we have to, you know, put the focus back on you know, humans and human reasoning. We need to do a better job of educating people how to be good news consumers. And really, I'm following something that Alexander Meiklejohn said back in 1948. He was also skeptical of the marketplace of ideas metaphor. And he did it, you know, a hell of a lot earlier than I did. But, you know, he said that this is essentially, you know, intellectual laissez-faire, you know, that we're just, you know, we're just letting ourselves be, you know, spoon-fed to, you know, a certain extent by just like, oh, well, you know, the market will, you know, will take care of it. And no, I think we need to, you know, teach each other, you know, how to critically read and assess the news and information.
Eric, at NewsGuard, you had some experience with the British tabloid press, which is a unique form of journalism that's a little bit different than what we experience on the regular in America. And NewsGuard got some press of its own when it flagged the British tabloid, the Daily Mail. And as the story goes, I guess NewsGuard reached out to discuss the Daily Mail's journalism practices, but got no response and concluded that the publication was worthy of a red label. And that's your severe warning. So I want to just read a quick piece from the reporting on that by Slate back in January. The Mail cried foul, and they use a quote here. We have only very recently become aware of the NewsGuard startup and are in discussions with them to have this egregiously erroneous classification resolved as soon as possible. That's a spokesman for the Mail. Slate goes on to report the two companies are now in talks, both confirmed, with the Mail pleading its case for a better review. So, Eric, I'm curious, one, what has happened in the months since that little fight with the Daily Mail?
Right. So, by the way, saying the companies are in talks is another way of saying that that NewsGuard has been, you know, finally got a chance to interview and get some input from the Daily Mail. So as is our practice, and we always seek comment multiple times before we publish. And, you know, one of our mottos around here is algorithms don't seek comment, to distinguish how we do it versus how the sort of Facebooks of the world try to get a handle on fake news. And when we finally did hear from them, we had very detailed conversations. We went over specific articles. We talked about some, you know, broader standards. And as a result of that, just made a decision that on, I think, one or two of the criteria, we may have gotten it wrong. So we explained that to our readers, and we updated the label. We have been getting very positive feedback overall in the UK. We launched there maybe about a month ago, and the UK does have a culture and a history with tabloids, which is a little different than ours in the United States. And one thing that we do when we go into these markets is, first of all, we don't sit here and think that we truly understand it. We have journalists, editors, and writers based in all of the places where we are reviewing sites, and are trying to basically judge the websites and the news organizations, you know, according to the sort of the prevailing standards in those markets. So the British tabloids are colorful and interesting, and it's been a good challenge for us to try to get a handle on it. And one thing that we've learned is, and this is feedback that we've gotten from some very, very experienced British journalists, is everybody starts with a kind of feeling about a website. Well, that's a lousy website. That's a good website. But then when you actually force yourselves to go into the website and really analyze it, based on specific criteria, it kind of starts to break down a little differently. And again, we are trying to, as much as possible, apply all of our standards equally, whether or not it's a high end, a low end, upscale, downscale, legacy, you know, startup, whatever it is, to apply the same standards. And that actually can be very clarifying.
Okay, we're out of time, but I want to give each of you a few seconds here to offer some perspective on this final question. We have another presidential election next year. What impact or potential impact do we expect this fake news phenomenon to have on voters' minds? Jeffrey, we'll start with you.
I think what I'm worried about is that we haven't necessarily learned our lesson. Although there's been a lot of congressional inquiry about, you know, the impact of fake news and the like, there's this thing called third-person effect. And we all like to believe that other people are affected, for instance, by media content or fake news, but we're not. We're smarter than that. And I think we've seen several examples on both sides of the political spectrum where, you know, individuals have not acknowledged that.
And Eric, final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I share Jeffrey's concern, maybe a little pessimism about where we are right now. This is a very, very big problem. It's a global problem. There isn't a quick solution. Clearly, there needs to be much better curriculum and media literacy curriculum starting at the youngest grades, because yes, this is something which is sort of integrated into people's lives starting when they're very, very young. But to try to more directly answer your question, I do hope that as the experience of the last elections have sunk in for a lot of people, I do think that people have been educated, certainly about the Russian interference, and I think a lot of people are smarter about trying to assess the credibility of the information that comes in front of their eyeballs. But without question, this is a challenge that we're all going to be working on for a long time.
Our thanks to NewsGuard editorial director Eric Efron and University of Cincinnati associate professor Dr. Jeffrey Blevins. Thanks to both of you for talking to us today.
Thank you, Michael.
Great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Up next, Beyond Guilt and its effort to implement sentencing reform. We'll talk with a local attorney and a Cincinnati college student who was sentenced to 20 years in prison after robbing a bank to pay for his university tuition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.